Let's begin.
Okay.
Welcome everyone to the seventh season of Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion's continuing learning series, Alumni Learn. This is a special project of our president, Rabbi Aaron Pankin. I am Dina Stein, Assistant Director of Alumni Engagement and Development and Director of Alumni Learn. During this session and throughout the year, you can always reach alumni engagement at alumni@huc.edu. I'll share with you some technical details about this session in a moment. We at HUCJIR are excited to bring you the latest in research and learning from our faculty. This year, we are pleased to offer online opportunities for learning focused on engaging learners with Israel, Beyond the Pew, Modern Jewish Ethics, special sessions, and mini courses taught by our most well-known faculty. A full list of session speakers and times can be found on the Alumni Learn website. That's huc.edu/alumni learn. Today we are happy to present the first session in our mini course with Rabbi Lewis Barth, PhD, What Really Happened at Midnight, a sermon from Pesichta de Rav Kahana on Exodus 12:29 in preparation for Passover. I will introduce him momentarily, but before I do that, I would like to say a few words about Alumni Learn. Any associated materials or recommended reading from this session will be posted on the ancillary materials page of the Alumni Learn site, huc.edu/alumni learn. Following the course, you will receive a link for an evaluation of the learning. You will also find the link posted with the recorded sessions and ancillary materials. Please do take a few moments to fill out your evaluation. Your feedback does assist us in providing future learning that meets your interests and needs. If you wish to provide comments after each session, you are more than welcome to email me at alumni@huc.edu. You are encouraged to ask questions to today's speaker. If you are joining the session online, you can either add your questions in the chat box, which you can open by scrolling your mouse over the Zoom screen and clicking the chat box button. You will also have the opportunity, we do ask you to mute your audio when you are not speaking to help cut down background noise with our recording. But then you are more than welcome when you have a question or would like to add to discussion, please unmute yourself. You can do this if you are online by scrolling your mouse again over the Zoom screen and clicking the microphone button, which should be found at the bottom left of your screen. This will mute and unmute you. If you have video, you are encouraged to please share your video as it does add to the quality of our session together. If you are on the phone and have a question, you are welcome to email me at alumni@huc.edu and I will act as your voice during the session. If you have technical difficulties with today's session, please write in the chat box and I will be happy to assist you. Now it is my pleasure to welcome our speaker. Rabbi Lewis M. Barth is Professor Emeritus of Midrash and Related Literature at Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion in Los Angeles and former dean. He is a native of Los Angeles, graduated from UCLA, studied at HUC's Los Angeles campus, and was ordained and received his PhD from HUC in Cincinnati. He was a member of the faculty at Los Angeles campus between 1969, beginning in 1969 rather, and served as dean from 1970 to 1979, and again from 1997 to 2006. During his deanship, Rabbi Barth was primarily responsible for bringing rabbinic ordination to HUC's Los Angeles campus. After his retirement from the deanship, he continued to teach at HUC until June 2012. Additionally, in 2006, he became a non-clinical candidate, and then in 2010, a research candidate at the Institute of Contemporary Psychoanalysis in Los Angeles. He received his doctorate in psychoanalysis from ICP February 3rd, 2016. His psychoanalytic practice is in Encino, California. Again, it is my pleasure to welcome our speaker. And if you have questions, again, you may post those into the chat box or email me at alumni@huc.edu. And with that, I am more than happy to welcome today's speaker.
Okay, so Dina, thank you for that lovely introduction, which you read perfectly. It's great. It's really a pleasure to do this. I love the opportunity when it comes up. It's more rare these days to teach Midrash, but I thought that since we're doing it and there are multiple sessions, it's an opportunity to look at something that may be or may not be useful for everybody, and that is the sermon in the Sikta de Rav Kahana, which deals with the theme Vayehi Bachatzi Halayla, and it's a sermon for Pesach. So why don't we just begin, and let me see if I can do this and get this up on the screen. Yes, now I did that. Now, are you seeing anything?
You need to now share your screen. If you scroll over the Zoom page, then you'll see the green share screen at the bottom.
This green share screen at the bottom. Okay. Yeah. Now I want to share the screen. There. That does it. So everybody can see that now. It's right in front of them. Okay. So what I thought I would do to begin with, is, you know, because there's a lot of what looks like at first very diverse material in this pisca or chapter, and in fact it's organized as a typical rabbinic homily with petichtaot or proems, gufa, the body of the sermon, and the Nehemta. When we look at the Petich Ta'ot, you will see they all start with different places. One starts with a verse from Psalms, and then two of them with verses from Isaiah. They all end with this Exodus 12, 29. When we go to the body of the sermon, as you will see, it's organized again rather typically, but it needs a little explanation. It has some transition paragraphs. It deals with prayer at midnight in paragraph Dalet, paragraph Hey, deals with, again, a theme related that is brought up. How does the night divide itself into various parts? And then, as you will see, the gufa turns back to the the Torah verse 12:29. It deals with, and God smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt. It expands on that in section 7, again from the firstborn of Pharaoh. And then it goes to a parallel verse in Exodus 11:5. To the firstborn of the slave girl. It continues the same theme that we've already introduced above, and we'll see this as we go through. And the firstborn of the cattle explains why even the firstborn of the cattle had to be wiped out. And then a kind of riff on punishments that comes slowly, and if they bring about repentance, fine. If not, worse punishments and ultimately death. And then the Nehemta. Now, when we begin with this, you'll notice that I haven't indicated what the Petich Ta'ot are about, because I want us to do a little discovery on this. And if anybody wants to take notes and kind of fill in the details of this, that's fine. Send them to me, and I'll build up the outline if you want. But, excuse me, I just got to turn off my telephone. Okay, so what I want to do now is go back to the share screen. Where do I find that? Dina?
You should find that by scrolling over the Zoom screen. The buttons should pop up at the bottom or at the top of your screen. There should be a...
There is a green thing. Wait a minute. Yeah. New share. Share screen. Yeah. Oh, okay. So this will do it. And let me share the screen going here. Wait a minute. It didn't do it.
We see the Hebrew text now.
You see the Hebrew text, but I don't see the Hebrew text. Well, that's all right. If you see the Hebrew text, I got it in front of me. So let's deal with the first petichta. And what I propose is, if anybody wants to read it for everybody, raise your hand and read it. If not, I'll do it. Let me start off and we'll see how it goes. Rav Tanchum de Yafo, b'shem Rav Nunya de Caesarea, patach ve'ech sheval ada'at zot amal hi be'enai. Amar David, ein bria yechola la'amod al chatzi halayla ela hakadosh baruch hu. Aval ani amal hi be'enai. Ulefi she'ein bria yechola la'amod al chatzi halayla ela hu, lefichach amar vayehi b'chatzi halayla, and it goes on, v'adonai hika et kol b'chor Mitzrayim. Now, you notice that the proof text or the Torah verse that's cited at the end, we only have the first part of it. Vayehi b'chatzi halayla. We don't have the name Adonai, but it's implied there, and we understand that's what it is. So the question now is, if we were to fill in the meaning of this, what is this all about? And here is there a way of opening it up? Helene, you look very thoughtful there. Any comments about it? What's it all about?
As a reminder, everybody is muted. To unmute yourself, if you are on the Zoom screen, please scroll your mouse over the Zoom screen and you will find the mute button at the bottom left of the screen.
Okay.
Helene, I just unmuted you.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Go ahead, Helene.
It seems as if the issue is that the exact moment of Chatzi Halayla has great power, but what is it and who can determine exactly when that moment is?
Yeah, right. And the question here is, what's behind this issue? What's behind this issue is, you're correct, it has great power, but it really represents the rabbi's what can I say, a compulsion to be as precise as possible. They really want to be precise. So what they're saying here is that they're putting this verse from Psalms in David's mouth. That's a reasonable thing to do. Why? David wrote the Psalms, right? You know, and we're going to come back to that idea in a few minutes. So the psalm is Vachshava Ladat Zot Amal Hi Beina. I try to figure out to understand this thing, but it's too difficult. And so David says, nobody can do this. Nobody can La'amod Al Chatzi Halayla. It's an interesting phrase. It doesn't mean literally to stand on, but it literally means to understand when is exactly midnight except God. But me, as for me, yeah, it's too hard. Amalhi be'enai. And then, because no creature is able to understand when exactly midnight is, therefore our Torah verse begins, Vayehi b'chatzi halayla vadonai, and it links up chatzi halayla with the name Adonai. Anybody have any thoughts about that? I have four people on screen here. Do you have more people, Dina?
Yes, I do see other people. If you would like to, again, you can unmute yourself.
And how do I see the whole gang?
At the top, you should see at the top of your screen, or it might be to your right.
Yeah.
You can see the pictures. When you scroll over the pictures, you'll see a button that you can press to scroll down. You'll see a down button.
Oh.
If you are unable to mute yourself and you are on video and would like to ask a question, I'm looking at everyone, so you can just raise your hand.
Oh, I see. This has got a different... Oh, now I see people. Now I see Daniel Plotkin and Michael Shire. Hi, Michael. And Cantor Mandy Beckstein and Amy, and I think that's the group. No, there's even a few more. Amy Sapowith. Okay. So we got the whole gang here. All right. So anybody have any thoughts about why this becomes so important for the rabbis, aside from their, crazy mishigasa about being as exact as possible?
This is Michael Shire speaking. I imagine that because this is going to be an act that is going to involve the destruction of a human being, the children of the Egyptians, the firstborn, that the very act of doing it is going to have to be so, like you said, precise, because it's going to only be a selection of the population and only a group within those families that other rabbis indicating that that this can be only done by God, who can only know these kind of ways of doing this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Anybody have any other ideas? Amy?
This is Amy. I have a thought that using the Yod-Heh Vav-Heh name of God to encompass all of time, and because it's present, past, and future, that only that sort of energetic essence could be precise in time if it encompasses all time.
Okay, and that's a really good comment which clicked off something in my mind, and that is it's Vadonai, it's Yud-Heh Vav-Heh Hikah, smote or killed all the firstborn of Egypt. Is there anything surprising to you about why the Bible uses Yud-Heh Vav-Heh there rather than Elohim? You may remember that there is, and there's a switch at one point in rabbinic literature, but Yud-Heh Vav-Heh comes to mean God in God's Midat HaRachamim.
Correct.
And Elohim is Midat HaDin. The switch is based on the view, on the verse, Adonai, Adonai, El Rachum, right? Erech HaPayim, Rav Chesed, etc. So maybe they are dealing here with two complicated issues. Number one, it says God because only God can understand when exactly midnight is. And B, how can we use the name Adonai here because Adonai is El Rahum? And this is very surprising, and we will get on, we will see even more how surprising it is to them in the next paragraph. Okay, let me ask, anybody like to read? Or if not, I will read it and we'll look at it again. Nobody jumped up. Okay, Beth.
Before you start, if you could please scroll down, Rabbi Barth,
So
that we can all see it on our screen.
Okay.
If you just scroll down, it should move it for us, and I'll let you know when to stop.
Yeah, I would be happy to do that, except that I've still got the outline on my screen. So how do I get rid of this outline thing?
So why don't you stop sharing?
Okay, I'm going to stop sharing. Okay, that's me. Okay.
And then you can either start sharing again or I can share it.
Okay, well, let me see if I can share it now. And let's see if this will do it. No, it didn't do it.
It did bring it up for us.
It did bring it up for you. You know what, Amy, Dina, why don't you share it?
Okay, why don't you start and I will pull up the document.
Okay. All right, so it's Rav Acha Patach Ani Adonai Hu Shmi Uchvodi La'acher Lo Etein Utehilati Lapsilim. Ani Adonai Hu Shmi Amar Rav Acha Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ani Adonai Hu Shmi, meaning Hu Shmi Shekarali Adam HaRishon. Hu Shmi She, okay, good, a little further. Excellent. Hu Shmi Shekarali Adam HaRishon, Hu Shmi Shehitneti Beni Levein Atzmi, Hu Shmi Shehitneti Beni Levein Malachei HaSharet, Uchvodi La'acher Lo Etein, Rav Menachem Amar B'Shem Rav Avin Elu HaShedim. Rav Nechemia b'shem Rav Mina Amar Ein Kol Bria Yehola Lahavin Bein Tipa Shel Bechor L'She Eina Shel Bechor Ela HaKadosh Baruch Hu Aval Ani Amalhi Beinai Lefichach Ulefi She'ein Bria Yehola Lamod Al Chatzi HaLaila Ela Hu Lefichach Vayihi B'Chatzi HaLaila Varunai. Now, what do you notice in here that is similar to the first petichta? It begins with a different big biblical verse. It emphasizes the phrase to begin with, Adonai, Ani Adonai Hu Shmi. And it goes on with the statement of Rav Acha to emphasize, that's really my name. Adonai is my name. It's the name that Adam called me. It's the name that I stipulated. Hitneti Beini Levein Atzmi. You know, for myself, when I talk about myself, I call myself Adonai. It's the name that I stipulated between me and the ministering angels. So far, it's the emphasis on the A part of the petichta verse. Now we go to the B part of the verse, Uchvodi La'acher Lo Etein. And this is a little peculiar because the question is, what is the acher? And so Rav Menachem says, these are the demons. Now there seems to be a difference of opinion about why the word acher means demons, whether it's because acher is like achronim and the demons were created late, an interpretation that I don't relate to, but rather that the demons are of another character altogether, And so that's why the word is used here. One way or another, it doesn't seem to add anything to our particular discussion. And so now the discussion goes on and it continues with language that's very similar to what we had above, except this time it's Ein Kol Briya Yehola Lahavchin Ben Tipa Shel Bechor L'She'ena Shel Bechor Ela HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, what is a Tipa Shel Bechor? You know, I think maybe people ought to unmute, because maybe if they unmute, they would want to speak. Well.
So for me, the tipa is the, must be the drop of semen that creates the firstborn.
Right. And so it's a little peculiar, because the question is, why are we dealing with this? It's another area where nobody knows, only God can know, and therefore, l'fi she'ein b'riya yechola la'amod al chatzi alayla elahu, that's why it's connecting this with our Torah verse and our Petichta verse. So once again, it's only God can know with great exactitude. Now, I want to stop sharing your screen, Dina, and I want to put up something on my screen. How do I do that?
I've just stopped sharing my screen. So you can click on the green share screen button.
Which is where?
If you scroll over the Zoom platform, the Zoom page, then you should see it in the bottom.
Okay, I'm not seeing it.
Are you on the Zoom video screen?
Yeah, I'm on the Zoom. The Zoom video screen. Yeah, I'm not seeing this. Well, this is a problem. But it's not going to be a big problem. Let me see. I want to get, okay. I want to get something that I have here that I really want to share with you desperately.
Could I ask a question?
Yeah.
Hi, okay. So if the name of Adonai is something that Adam HaRishon gave Adonai, and also Adonai gave himself and the angels, so that means that the angels and humans and Adonai have the theoretical ability to be in that, to understand that point of midnight, and the demons don't.
Say that again, because I didn't exactly follow. Go ahead.
So I'm just trying to figure out the demon, the Shadim part again.
Right.
But if the name of Adonai, which is connected with the Chatzi Alayla, so that Yud-Heh Vav-Heh name.
Yeah, but was, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So if it was... So we get this list of, this was the name that Adam gave me, and the name that I gave, Hitneti, I gave myself, and also the angels, then theoretically, not practically maybe, but theoretically, all these three, so Adonai, angels, and humans, have the theoretical ability of being at that point or understanding that point of Chatzi HaLaila, but the demons are outside of this story in a sense. They can't even enter that special point of the Chatzi HaLaila of the Chesed of Adonai.
Mm-hmm.
Why would it be? So then, how does that work with David's assumption that So that makes the midnight point something we as humans could actually access, not the demons, but we could.
Because you're equating the part in the paragraph that where it talks about Hitneti Beni Levein Adam HaRishon. I think it's dealing with something else. It's simply stipulating how it is that God is called this name over and over again in these different contexts. It's not that it gives us the power to understand when, you know, being able to distinguish between one drop of semen and another drop of semen or when exactly at midnight is, but it's simply emphasizing what is God's name that we call God. Does that make any sense? Maybe. Okay. All right.
So let
me ask you now, are all of you seeing on your screen something that says 9 billion oscillation something?
We see an email that says, or a note that says atomic clocks.
Excellent. Okay. Now, I'm scrolling down. Can you see what I'm scrolling down to? Now, why am I bringing this up? Because this really relates to the last comment. Maybe we human beings can figure out when exactly night is. That is, I want to take us and jump out of the rabbinic period into, you know, 2018. Where did that happen all of a sudden? But here we are, and ask, how do we tell time? How do we know exactly, almost, exactly what time is? What time it is? Well, there is this discussion, about atomic clocks. And in an atomic clock, they're designed to measure the precise length of a second, got it? The base unit of modern timekeeping. And the International System of Units defines the second as the time it takes, and then it gives a technical thing, a cesium-113 atom in a precisely defined state to oscillate exactly. And this is the number of times it oscillates. And then the definition is even more. The second is the duration of that number of periods in the of the radiation corresponding to the transition between two hyperfine levels of the ground state of this particular atom. And the definition refers to the cesium atom at rest at a temperature of 0 Kelvin. Well, there's Celsius, there's Fahrenheit, and we've now learned about Kelvin. Okay, so now this business of atomic clocks are really interesting because you come down to the question, how accurate are atomic clocks? The accuracy of an atomic clock varies and is constantly improving. With an expected error of only 1 second in about 100 million years, the NIST-F1 in Boulder is one of the world's most precise clocks. You know, you wanted a little Trivial Pursuit? Well, it's not just in Midrash. Here it is in science. That is... This makes us almost as good as God because we can figure out with an expected error of only 1 second in about 100 million years what's going on here. This is, I think, quite amazing. And it takes us then back to our text And Amy, can you, Dina, I'm sorry. Dina, can you flip our text back up on the screen?
I can. I believe I need you to stop sharing your video. If you go to, yep.
Done.
Okay, let me pull it up.
Okay. Okay, now, so we've got the first two petichtaot that deal with God's name, and that God is the only one that can figure out exactly what time it is. Let's go on to now, Amy, to the Gimel and see what we've got here. This is, back down. Okay, there we go. This is a petichta that does not begin with a Rabbi so-and-so patach. It simply cites a verse and then takes off on it. And it is, Mekim Dvar Avdo Va'atzat Malachav Yashlim Ha'omer Lirushalayim Tushav Ula'are Yehuda Tivanena V'harvoteha Akomeim. What is that verse about? God Mekim here is fulfills, right, establishes, fulfills the word of his servant and the counsel or advice of his messengers or angels, he will bring to completion or perfection. So God says to Jerusalem, you will dwell again in your place or be filled with people. And to the cities of Judah, you will be built and, it will be built and they will be built and their ruins I shall reestablish. So now we want to see how this precisely applies this verse. So, Amy, can we start just going up the page a little? Yeah, okay. And so, Rav Brechia says that Mekim Dvar Avdo, etc. Einanu Yodim, Shehu Omer Lirushalayim Tushav La'are Yehuda Tivanena. So that is already a rabbinic chutzpahdik statement. Well, since he says the A part of the verse, Mekim Dvar Avdo, so why don't we know that that Jerusalem will be resettled and the cities of Judah will be rebuilt? Obviously we know, okay? So now, Amy, go up some more. There, right there. But, and now he goes to a different place. And he says, Ela malach echad nigle al avinu Yaakov v'amarlo mashimcha v'yomer Yaakov. Vayomer lo Yaakov yeyamer od shimcha ki im Yisrael. Got it? All right, we remember that setting. And now, the text goes on and is going to cite another place where that same idea is stated. Nigle HaKadosh Baruch Hu ol Avinu Yaakov l'kayem gezerato shel oto malach. So God is revealing God's self to Jacob, l'kayim, to fulfill the decree of that malach. And so the malach spoke, you just notice in Genesis 32, 28 and 29, and now God is going to say the same thing almost word for word in Genesis 35, 9, and 10, Vayomer lo Elohim, Shimcha Yaakov, lo Yikare Od, etc. Ela Yisrael. Now, that being the case, Jerusalem, who all the prophets prophesied about that it will be built, how much the more so? Now, what's the idea there? Anybody have any thoughts? We're comparing the naming, the change of name of Jacob to Israel to the fulfillment of the prophetic vision that Jerusalem will be rebuilt. So what, why is that al achat kama vechama?
Because it's that many more of God's servants, the Nevi'im, who are stating this, and therefore if he fulfilled the word of Yaakov, he will fulfill the word of this great number of prophets.
Okay, and in since Nevi'im are also called Malachim, it's the same thing. There's one Malach and there's dozens of prophets that Malachim that said this. How much the more so? Of course God is going to do that. And then we've decided that since it says Malach Echad Nigla Avinu Yaakov, now we have to interpret who this Atzat Malachav Yashlim refers to. And this Zem Moshe. Dina, can you go up a bit? Okay, right there, hold it. Okay, this is Moses, right? Lokein Avdi Moshe, Hatzat Malachav Yashlim, Zem Moshe, Vayishlach Malach, Vyotzienu Mitzrayim. Okay, so first of all, number one, we have identified the Malach as Moses, and number two, we're going to identify that or make clear that God is going to fulfill the word that Moses gave them, communicated about God doing saving the people. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, Lechem Mor Lahem LeYisrael Va'avarti Be'eretz Mitzrayim Belaila Hazeh. Halach Moshe va'amar liYisrael, Ko amar Adonai kachatzot laila ani yotze betoch Mitzrayim. Okay, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kfar hivtachti leMoshe va'amarti lo, lo kein avdi Moshe b'chol beiti ne'eman hu, Yehe avdi Moshe kazvan. This is again a rabbinic chutzpahdik. They're putting a chutzpahdik statement in God's mouth. What? I, God, should wind up saying Moses is a liar? Ela ma she'amar Moshe kachatzi halayla, afani kachatzi halayla, v'fichach vayehi b'chatzi halayla. So, now, if we were to fill in this, What does this add to our discussion?
That it was Moshe's decision that it should happen at B'chatzi HaLaila?
No, it's not. It's Moses' decision, but Moses is conveying. Moses is one of God's messengers, yeah. Right? So Moses conveys God's thought, and God has to prove that if one of his messengers is conveying his thought, the messenger is not a liar, and God is going to fulfill Moses' word. And so Moses says exactly, Kachatzi Alayla, and God says, they're not making any difference between the bet and the chaf there. Michael, do you have any thoughts? You're looking down very profoundly.
I was just looking at the text, which I have in front of me.
Okay.
I know that the cut and the hay become more important later on, I think, if I remember rightly.
Yeah. Okay. And now, does this one have any hint of what the other two were dealing with? That is something that only God could know, that no human being could figure out because it's too difficult? Or is this something else? Is this giving us a different perspective?
Well, I'll take a stab. I think it's a different perspective. Mm-hmm. I think it's God fulfilling promises rather than God knowing the exact and being the only one who knows the exact time of Bechatzi Halayla or the exact moment of Bechor is conceived.
That, I think you're absolutely right. And yet there is something else going on here that goes back to the rabbinic compulsion to pin things down exactly. They're asking, you know, why does God say that here? Vayehi b'chatzi halayla v'Adonai hika. Well, he says it because Moses said, k'chatzi halayla. In other words, they're making an exact, the two terms are exactly the same. Their meaning is used to give a different message here, but the terms are exactly the same. Does that make any sense, Helene?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now, what we're going to do is we're going to go to Dalet.
Rabbi Barth, before we do that, a comment came in. If you tried to say that it was not God, not the time, or the real firstborn, these three together say that it is, and also that it removes doubt that it is a coincidence. The precision makes it clear that it has to be God because only God could do this.
Okay, accepted. Now, who sent you the comments so we can give them a gold star for today?
That was from Shauna.
Okay, Shauna. Thank you, Shauna. All right. So now I want to try to put up, that's fine. We'll go with the text that you've got there. This takes us to a wholly different place. We go back to David, but it's something really not directly connected. So we'll see. Chatzot Laila, well, that's connected. Akum lohodot l'Adonai al mishpatei tzidkecha. Rav Pinchas b'shem Rav Eliezer bar Menachem, ma haya David oseh? Notel nevel v'kinor v'notnam merashotav v'omed b'chatzi halayla u'menagen bahem. V'hayu chachmei Yisrael shomim et kolo v'omrim ma'im David ha'melech hu osek b'torah anu alachat kama v'chama v'nimtzu kol Yisrael asukim b'torah. This is the first of a series of statements in this large paragraph. And incidentally, this large paragraph is not a petichta. It does begin with a biblical verse from Nach. We would expect it to be a petichta. But if you go to the end of the paragraph on the next page, we don't have to right now, it doesn't end with Vayehi b'chatzi halayla. So what we've got is the first part of a transition into the gufa of the sermon. And what's he dealing with here? Dina, can you bring it down? No, up take it back up a little bit. Okay. The first part is, have you run across this agata before, everybody? Do you remember it? It's the question of, you know, well, the verse from Psalms is applied to David. David wrote the Psalms. Again, that theme comes back. And it's midnight, and he's going to get up to praise God for God's righteous judgments. Whatever Mishpatei Tzidkecha means, we'll find out in a few minutes, but that's what he's going to do. So the question is, you know, I can't visualize this. So what does it mean David is going to get up? What does he do? Well, he takes his musical instruments, he puts them at the head of the bed or the foot of the bed, whatever it is. And he gets up at midnight and he plays them. And then it says, V'chachmei Yisrael shomim kolo v'omrim. Now, they make a Kal v'chomer argument. If David gets up to V'hu osek b'Torah, how much the more so should we do it? And since the Chachmei Yisrael did it, v'nimtzu'u, and it is found, the result is that everybody does it. So David becomes the model of studying all night, and David doesn't even have an exam the next day. That's muted, so I can't hear your chuckles. Well, anyway, it's a little odd. All right, so shomim et kolo, and now, do any of you notice anything about the first part that says, you know, after Mahaya David, what does David do? And it says, David takes these instruments and he plays them at night. And what do the sages draw from this? They draw from it, David is Osek B'Torah. So the Chatzot Laila Akum Lahodot Lecha means really that David Osek B'Torah. David's singing is an act of busying himself, a kind of studying the Torah. All right, now the question comes up in front of this next material, and I know that somebody there should have asked the question, well, wait a minute, we were talking before about atomic clocks. They didn't have clocks. So how did David know? Did he have some kind of an alarm clock? Well, he did. Amar Rav Levi, Chalon Haita al Gabe Mitato, Shel David, Petucha Letzafon, V'haya Kinor Talui Kenegda, V'haita Ruach Tzfonit Yotza B'chatzi Halayla, U'menashevet Bo, V'haya HaKinor Menagein Me'elav. Now, that's the way it was done in those days, right? It was, you know, exactly at midnight, a north wind began to blow. It went through this little window, and it hit on the strings of this kinor, this harp, and this phrase, Vahaita HaKinor Menagein Me'elav. What does that mean? Anybody want to give me a wonderful translation of that? It means that the harp played from itself, may a love. And that phrase, may a love, appears all kinds of places in rabbinic literature. The oxen who were, the milch kine who were leaving the Philistines to go back to the Israelites, they started walking on their own. May aleihem. Why did they do it on their own? Because oxen normally wouldn't leave their calves. And so they had to do it in spite of themselves. Here, the harp begins to play of itself. And then we have a proof text. And Dina, you want to run the text up a little bit? Bahaya kamenagen hamenagen. And it goes on to say, kamenagen bamenagen lo nemar, ela kamenagen hamenagen, hakinor haya menagen me a love. It's a play on this funny phrase, umenagen hamenagen. That is, it's as if the menagen is the player, or the one who performs on the instrument, and the menagen is the instrument itself. It doesn't say kemenagen b'menagen. It isn't that the player plays on the instrument, but rather that the instrument plays on itself. V'hayu kol Yisrael shomim kolo v'omrim ma im David ha-melech kein anu alachat kama v'chama. So once again, akal v'homer, and this is the homer, nimtzu, the result of the homer, nimtzu kol Yisrael oskin b'torah. The entire community of Israel is occupied in the Torah. I think, and Dina, you tell me if I'm right, that we should put a little note right there. Because that's where we'll start next time. And I would love it next time if I could hear from more of you, but we're playing around with the technology. It's fun to see those of you who showed up and to hear those of you who showed up by phone. And are we done, Amy? Dina?
Oh, yes. So Rabbi Barth, I want to thank you so much for leading today's first session and helping us to delve into and really in fine detail understand this text. Deeply appreciate it. If you have questions for Rabbi Barth, I encourage you to please email me at alumni@huc.edu and I will forward your questions on to him. And as a reminder, we have two more sessions coming up. The first is on Monday, February 12th. Or rather, the second of our sessions is on Monday, February 12th at 1 p.m. Eastern, and Wednesday, February 21st, also at 1 p.m. Eastern. And thank you also to our alumni. Thank you to everybody for signing on and joining us and being a part of this learning and adding your voice. We do encourage that for the next two sessions. As Rabbi Barth said, we're playing around with different formats. Maybe next time we'll try not muting. We would love to have your voice and participation and would not want the technology to be a barrier in that. If you would like to see other of our Alumni Learn opportunities this semester, I encourage you to go to huc.edu/alumnilearn. And again, we are not sending out the evaluation until after the end of the mini course. So if you do have comments or feedback, I do encourage you to please email me alumni@huc.edu, and I will be happy to respond to you and share on any applicable comments.
Yes.
With that, I want to say thank you to everybody. Thank you, Rabbi Barth. And I'm closing today's session. Have a wonderful day.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Take care. Oh.